Burakovsky. Sightseeing on the outside, just probing the defense now. Backdoor look, Ovechkin rips, he scores! In a flash! Welcome to the club, number 500 for the Great Apes!
Huge, you know, the 500 in this league, and how everybody playing goalies, that's pretty cool.
Welcome to Tape to Tape, T2T. I'm Ryan Dixon. I'm a writer for Sportsnet magazine and Sportsnet.ca. Sitting to my left, all laid back West Coast style, it's NHL senior producer for Sportsnet.ca, Rory Boylan.
How's it going?
Not bad.
The Panthers streak is over, but...
life goes on.
Life goes on. Alex Ovechkin's... reaping up those all-time goal charts. This guy, is there a more special talent in the NHL today? Like he is unique in his personality and in the way he can produce goals. The guy is, he might be the best goal scorer of all time, whether or not he passes Gretzky's mark by the end of his career.
Yes, it's interesting when you get into the score-adjusted measurements. It's true. I mean, he is, he might be, I mean, you get an argument from the Gretzky camp, probably from the Mike Bossy camp too. Mm-hmm. But Ovi is front and center in any talk you want to have about the greatest goal scorers of all time. We're going to keep rapping a little bit about Ovi, about Patrick Kane and the Chicago Blackhawks, another offensive force. I referenced Rory's West Coast style off the top. Wasn't really a reference to Rory. It was a reference to the fact we're going to have Mark Spector on today talking about Calgary, Edmonton, Vancouver. We're also going to have a young fellow who works for the Ottawa 67s of the OHL who's going to make you feel both old and lazy. So get ready, folks. But yeah, Ovi, what a talent. And it's interesting. I know you mentioned... there's an article on Sportsnet.ca from Stephen Birch making the case that he could make a real run at Gretz.
Yeah, so he's done two articles this year on Ovechkin. One was a few months back looking at the score, at the era-adjusted totals and ranking Ovechkin against the other top scorers in NHL history, and I believe he was two on that one. And so when he got to 500, as he was leading up to 500, we were working on... Steve was working on, okay, how realistic is it that he actually passes Gretzky? Yeah, if you look at the era adjusted, he's probably the best or one of the best goal scorers ever. But is he actually going to pass the 894 goals for Gretzky? And Steve looked at this and he looked at the average. He predicted what his goal totals would be until the age of 40. So this isn't assuming if he gets to 40 and he's close to Gretzky, is he going to keep playing for a couple more years to try and get it? And so. By Birch's estimation, at the age of 40, after his 40-year-old season, Ovechkin could be within 30 goals of Gretzky's total. And that's incredible. Well, consider Wayne Gretzky in his era, and Gretzky did this a lot, it was not unusual for a player like him to have a 20% shooting percentage.
That's crazy.
Ovechkin's 12.4. He takes a lot of shots.
Yeah. I mean, the one time I ever heard Sidney Crosby say anything derisive about anything was when he was talking about some of the goals that went in the 80s. You know, like, give me a break.
Yeah, I mean,
you just don't see it, right? It's just not the same.
Yeah, you look at the goalies then and now, it's completely different. So even if Ovechkin doesn't pass Gretzky, the fact that we can even talk about this
let's throw this out there. We talked about his 40th birthday. His 40th birthday will be September 17th, 2025. Of course, September 17 being an interesting number there, interesting date, because had he been born 2 days earlier, he would have qualified for the 2003 draft. So let's just play this out. He would have played the 2003-04 season, and then the NHL lost a season in 4-5. So in this hypothetical world that we've created where he's born 2 days earlier, we could say that he lost 2 years of scoring that he otherwise would have had, because as a ultra-talented first overall pick, he goes right to the NHL, right? So even if you then say, well, it would have still been dead puck era, even both those seasons, let's say combined in those 2 years, he scores 66 goals. Maybe that would have been enough to put him over the top.
Yeah, and you know, what a black mark the 04-05 lockout was. But if you get to the end of Ovechkin's career and he's that close to Gretzky and he doesn't get it and he misses sure. that year, what a shame that would be, eh? But I don't know. It would be hard to imagine if you're that close to Gretzky that you wouldn't keep playing just to...
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see because the league is skewing so young. That's a double-edged sword, right? Because the guys are in better shape longer and keep themselves in such peak physical condition. But as the league skews younger and younger, crazy it is to contemplate it today. Like, could the NHL be too fast for Alex Ovechkin when he's 41?
You know what? At the same time, though, if as long as he's got young players around him, he could change his game to become the guy that I'm just going to sit here on the hash marks over by the dot, and you keep feeding me pucks. I'm just going to one-time
him up.
Because that shot's not going to go to yeah.
That's sure. perfect for him.
Maybe at the end of his career, he doesn't like. He's going to have to change his game. Every player needs to change their game somewhat to stay competitive, to stay to stay good late in their career, and maybe that's what Ovechkin does. He's going to lose his speed. He's probably not going to lose his streak. He's always going to be tough to knock off the puck.
You forget how what Jager's, a bull he is,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Like, he's 220.
Yeah, yeah. 6'3". And that's what Jager is. Like, he's still really, really hard to knock off the puck, so that won't go away. But if, yeah, maybe he just becomes a... I mean, he's already a goal specialist, but that's what he does, is you just feed Alex Ovechkin the puck. Maybe he plays the point on the power play or something like that, and as long as you have the speed guys around him, he's always going to have a great shot. He's always going to be tough to knock off the puck. So maybe that's the specialty he kind of moves into as his career goes on.
When you look at the signature offensive players, the leading goal scorer, and the, or I guess not leading goal scorer, but still, I would say Ovechkin is considered the premier goal scorer in the league. And then the guy with the most points this year, Pat Kane, you kind of have a beautiful contrast there, don't you? Like, you've got that strength and pure speed of Alex Ovechkin, and then you've got maybe just the silliest hands and vision we've seen, hands maybe ever, in terms of like the stick handling and the amount of times you think someone's going to take the puck off a stick and they don't, and vision in, you know, maybe going back to someone like Gretzky, who knows?
Well, you remember that video from last year with Kane stick handling through that just mass of pucks? I mean, and he's not hitting any of the pucks. He's not moving any of them. How fast he was doing it was just incredible to watch. But yeah, you're right. Like, these are the two supreme talents, offensive talents in the NHL today. And they're so different in the way that they go about that.
Which is great.
Which is great. Kane is in on 50% of Chicago's goals?
A little better than 50, I think. And we're not talking about some star who's playing with a team of slugs here who's like, well, all they got is this guy who can, one guy can put the puck in the net and no one else can. It's like, look at that supporting cast. That is saying something.
He's so far this season, he's played 16 fewer games than he did all of last year, and he's 1 point shy of his point total from last year. I mean, it's amazing. It's amazing to watch both of these guys. They are definitely both special talents. And tune in. Ovi is one of my favorite players to watch. He might be my favorite player to watch in the NHL today. I also like, and this is a completely different kind of player, but I also like watching Darren Helm a lot when he's healthy. But Ovechkin...
That's extremes.
Yeah, but Ovechkin is... not only is he exciting and you never know what he's going to do, but you get the sense that he is an historic talent.
He is something else, no doubt. You know what else is something else? A kid who is, and I know the word kid gets thrown around a lot in hockey parlance, but I think it's justified. We're talking about a young man who is just shy of his 20th birthday, already has a job scouting with the OHL's Ottawa 67s. We're going to have him coming up next to talk a little about exactly how he's gotten to where he is. I know you know his story a little bit better, Rory. Just give us a little primer.
So he got to a certain age, and I believe he was 14, and he realized, I'm not going to make the NHL, but I want to stay in the game. And he started, trying to feel around, and he worked for an agency, and then he got his foot in the door with a junior A team, and then he got hired by the 67s. He just keeps moving up this ladder, and he's going to university at the same time. He what might feel you lazy, but he might make you feel lazy, yeah. But he might also inspire you.
Yes.
Coming up after the break, Jonathan Kiriakou, 19-year-old scout and director of player development for the Ottawa 67s.
We pulled in just behind the bridge. He lays her down. He frowns. Gee, my life's a funny thing. Am I still too young? He kissed her then and there. She took his ring, took his babies. It took him minutes, took her nowhere. Heaven knows he'd have taken in a finger.
Welcome back to Tape to Tape. Joining us on the line now is Jonathan Kiriakou, scout and director of player development for the OHL's Ottawa 67s. Jonathan, how you doing?
Doing great, guys. How are you?
Doing all right. You've got a bit of a unique story here, and you haven't even really been writing it for so long, but why don't you just, to start, give us the quick and dirty version of your involvement in hockey, going back to when you first decided that you wanted to pursue a life in hockey that might not be actually playing the game.
Yeah, for sure. I was, pretty young when I first started to get interested in the management side of the business. I was about 14 or so, and started working with Ian Pulver, an agent here in Toronto, who's been very successful and let me come on and do a little bit of intern work for him. And after that, joined another agency here in Toronto, a startup firm called Level of Sports Group. Started scouting for them, and after that, decided I wanted to get a little bit of a taste of managing a team, and found a home scouting with the Wellington Dukes of the OJHL, successful Junior A franchise run by Marty Abrams, who's real well-known, successful coach at that level. And, following that, was able to join on with the Ottawa 67s in the scouting capacity. And so now I'm in my third year with them now, and second in my current role as director of player development.
And just to be clear, folks, Jonathan has done all of this. What are you, a couple weeks shy of your 20th birthday?
Yeah, I'll be 20 in about 2 weeks, just under 2 weeks.
Amazing. With the 67s, what you're currently doing there, what are your responsibilities to the team?
Well, my job is essentially just to oversee our prospects currently not on our roster. So I deal, mainly with our 16 and 17 year old draft picks who have accumulated through the last few drafts. So it's a lot of communication and monitoring of those players to make sure that they're going in the right direction in their development, both on and off the ice, and putting themselves in an opportunity to have success in their hockey careers and then just their lives in general.
So, Jonathan, were you a player then? I assume you grew up on the ice?
I had some experiences playing AAA, but at a younger age, but nothing too significant, no.
Okay. And what, you mentioned you started off working with agent Ian Pulver. What sort of pulled you to I guess, cross over, you could say, to the management side?
Oh, I guess it was just kind of a realization that, I wasn't going to have success as a player. I think everybody in, who loves the game wants to first and foremost have a career playing it. That's the reason why everybody, falls in love with the sport in the first place. But, I think it's the next best thing, and I've really enjoyed every step of the way so far, and, have no plan to stop it in the near future.
Now, I think a lot of people have the same, like, it's a romantic thing. Like, I can't make the NHL as a player. It would be cool to scout. It'd be cool to go and watch hockey games and kind of try and find that hidden gem. They don't realize, I don't think, how demanding it can be, how much travel, especially at any level, really. Since you started doing it, tell us something about the job that was challenging that you didn't really know or think about when you first got started?
Yeah, for sure. It's it's definitely a bit of a realization when you first join how demanding it is. And I think the biggest thing, first of all, you got to have when you whether you're playing it on the ice or you're looking to have success off the ice in the game, is you just got to be passionate about what you do, and you know, let that drive your motivation to, you know, to go to all these games and travel, you know, wherever it is you need to go. You know, passion will take you a long way, but in terms of, you know, some challenges that, you know, I realized, you know, in the early stages of my, you know, career and still to this day, of course, I'm, you know, I'm a student as well. I'm, you know, sitting in the, at the University of Toronto right now as we speak. And, you know, I think just, the time management is really something that, you know, is important to have, you know, if you're looking at success in really any field and, you know, especially when you're trying to, you know, do a balancing act such as this one. And so I think that's, you know, it's always been the biggest challenge, is something I feel, you know, I've, done pretty well with so far. And it's something I, you know, really strive to set out, and having our players follow that same path as student athletes. So, you know, it's always a challenge, but, you know, I think over time you get used to that and, you know, find ways to have success despite that adversity.
So this is something I've wondered about, because being a student and being a scout both seem like full-time jobs. So, like, how do you balance that? Can you run us through what, like, an average day would be when you have to go to school and then maybe go to a game at night?
Well, I've been, you know, I've been lucky, I think, so far in my scheduling. A lot of my university classes happen, you know, in the early part of the day, and luckily most of the hockey games are played in the evening or at night around here. So, you know, it's, you know, start the day down here, downtown Toronto, you know, attend all my classes. Luckily, I also commute on the GO train from Pickering, where I live, and that gives me a little bit of time to, you know, to get some work done before I get home or even before I get to school. And, you know, as soon as I get home, it's, you know, it's pretty, pretty quick to finish that homework. And so I can get out to the rink, later on. So, you know, you just got to make sure you're not falling behind on anything. And, like I said before, it's all time management.
One thing I wonder if is a bit of a challenge that would be unique to you is you're dealing with talking with players who are essentially your age, maybe a little bit younger, and sometimes you're telling them things they might not be all that excited about, like, hey, we need you to go play with this junior A team as opposed to major junior, where, you know, everyone, if you've been drafted, wants to be. Are you conscious of how, I guess for lack of a what better way of putting it, you can, you know, have an authoritative voice, and do you worry about how, you know, you might be perceived by someone who's your own age going, well, why is this guy who's only 2 years older telling me what to do?
Yeah, I think, you know, early on, that's something I was, you know, definitely aware of, but it's not something I've really, you know, spent too much time worrying about. I think, you know, as long as I'm telling information that I feel is correct and justified, and, you know, I feel like I'm putting them in a position where I think they can, you know, achieve success. You know, I've never let my age be an advantage or a detriment to myself. So it's just a matter of, I think, you know, being effective in, you know, in the role as a manager of these prospects, and, you know, ensuring that they're staying on top of, you know, whatever it is that they need to accomplish, and making sure that, you know, as somebody who is, you know, relatively close to their age, that I can be a little bit of a role model for them and set a good example, and, you know, help show them that, you know, with some hard work and, you know, being motivated and, you know, being effective in time management and so on and so forth, that they can, you know, have success in their desired field, which of course is to play on our team at some point.
What is your long-term goal in hockey? Is it to be, I mean, is it to get to the NHL? Is it to be a scout? Is it to be a director of player personnel, a GM? What is your goal here?
Yeah, no, I think it's, you know, pretty much the same as anybody who's playing. I think everybody wants to make it to the NHL in some capacity. So, you know, that would definitely be an ideal goal for myself. And, you know, whether it's managing there, you know, that would probably be my, my primary goal, is to manage in the league at some point, and, you know, potentially manage in the Ontario League at some point as well. You know, it's always been a, you know, it's been a fun process, I think, so far, and it doesn't always take you where you expect to go, but that's just the fun of it, I think.
And finally, for anybody who's listening who kind of wants to get into this, hearing your story and hearing how young you were and how hard you've worked to get into this, what advice would you give them to, if they want to get their foot in the door, what steps should they take?
Well, you know, I think I said it early on, you got to really be passionate about what you do and you got to show that. I think, you know, saying you want to do it is one thing, but actually getting out there and showing people that you're serious about this and, you know, getting out to the rink as much as possible and being visible, I think is huge as well. And, you know, trying to make connections, that's always an important thing as well. It's, you know, in any field of business, I think it's as much about who you know as what you know. And, you know, making those connections and being out there can go a long way.
Typically, we're used to keeping an eye on 19, 20-year-olds to see when they might play in the NHL. But I think in this case, we're going to make an exception and just see where this management career goes, because it's really interesting. Jonathan Kiriakou, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks a lot, guys. Anytime.
That's Jonathan Kiriakou. He is the not yet 20-year-old scout and director of player development for the Ottawa 67s. What an interesting story, and certainly going a story that's going to keep going for a number of years. When we come back on Tape to Tape, we're going to check in with the West Side, the Left Coast. Mark Spector of Sportsnet.ca is going to weigh in on the Oilers, Flames, and Canucks next on T2T.
Lost the puck, and here go the Flames. Goudreau on a breakaway, couldn't take the pass, got it back. Goudreau right in, scores! Are you kidding me? What a goal by Johnny Goudreau. Drops it for Nugent-Hopkins. Ryan Nugent-Hopkins. Sekera snaps the shot for the save. Sekera jams and scores! Andre Sekera!
From the Canucks left to right, Hanson can fly, winds and fires and scores! Yannick Hanson wins it for Vancouver!
Welcome back to Tape to Tape. Joining us on the line now, I'm assuming from beautiful Alberta, is Sportsnet.ca's Mark Spector. Spector, did I get that right?
Absolutely. How's things going out there?
Things are going all right out here. We're interested in how things are going out there. We'll get to the on-ice happenings of the Oilers, Flames, little Canucks later, but the proposed new Calgary Arena deal in the news these days. Why don't you just take us through sort of where we are up to the minute with that scene?
I hope you got a long show. the Calgary Flames, of course, who own the Stampeders and the local lacrosse team, the Calgary Roughnecks, have put together a proposal, very loosely put together, I think, for a new hockey arena, a new football stadium, a big field house for the city of Calgary's public usage. It's pressing up on $1 billion. It's just shy of $900 million, and likely is going to cost a lot more with there's land issues. The land has been poisoned by a creosote plant many years ago, so those costs are yet to be discovered. This is the beginning of a very long negotiation at a very poor time for the Flames. The dollar is low, as we all know. A barrel of oil is dipping below $30. It's crippling the Alberta economy. There's a huge tax ask by the Flames, and Gary Bettman in town yesterday in Calgary, so 2 days ago. This is going to be around for a long time, boys. This will not be a topic that will get settled upon quickly.
Now, on the Canadian dollar, like, we've gone through this before the league was a cap league in the early 2000s, late 1990s, and there was a real threat of the Oilers and I believe the Flames maybe not being able to stick around. Is that going to come up again this time, or is the league set up differently with the cap and with revenue sharing that's would be a little more protective for them?
Yeah, that's exactly it. You know, back then they did invent, to Bettman's credit, what they called the Canadian Assistance Plan, and it basically meant teams were given money to Edmonton and Calgary and some of the Canadian clubs. It's a completely different lay of the land now. There's a cap involved, so you can only spend so much. The problem back in the early 90s was, you know, Edmonton and Calgary, because of the dollar in their economy, could only afford X amount. but the Toronto Maple Leafs and the Dallas Stars could spend four times the payroll they were spending in Edmonton. And so not only did you have economic issues with your team in Calgary, you also had competitive issues because you just couldn't compete. So I think the cap system will change a lot of that. Revenue sharing, the only thing that'll change is, you know, Florida will get less money and Carolina will get less money, and Edmonton and Calgary will end up putting less money into the pot if not receiving. And that's going to hurt the league. It's going to stop the cap from going up for sure. And it's just going to transfer some of the angst from, Canadian centers down to those traditional revenue receivers in Nashville and Carolina. They're going to get less money, and that's going to hurt them too.
What do you make of the Flames on the ice this year? They started so horribly. I think 3 wins and maybe 13 to start, and then a lot better since then. But still, you know, precarious position as we talk here today, sitting 4 points out of a playoff spot if you look at their division and third place there, but also just a couple of points ahead of dead last Edmonton in the West. Do you see Calgary surging, maybe not Ottawa Senator style, but something along that in that pattern through the rest of the season and maybe getting into the playoffs?
Well, it's on one hand, the fact the Pacific is such a weak division, clearly the weakest in the league, it's good for fans because their teams, you look at Edmonton and Calgary, they're both way down at the bottom, but they both have, you know, realistic playoff aspirations still, you know, and it's amazing, but it's true. But here's the bad thing. You know, ownership's looking, let's say ownership in Calgary. I know the general manager down there, Brad Treliving, is looking long term. He doesn't look at that team like it's going to win a Stanley Cup tomorrow or this season. But it's awfully hard when you're only a few points out of the playoffs to go to your owner and say, owner, we should sell. You know, owner, we should make long-term moves at the deadline, and because I think we don't have a good enough team. The owner looks at you and goes, dude, I mean, we could get in the playoffs. We're going to play a fairly weak Pacific Division team. We could get 2 rounds in here. So it's going to make for some confusion. I know that the general managers, certainly these Alberta teams, they have no, you know, there's no question in their minds where their teams are. They're not great teams and they got to get better. But because the playoffs are still an actual reality, it clouds the circumstance out here a little bit, that's for sure.
Turn to the Oilers, who are kind of in a similar position, only 6 points out of a playoff, but dead last in the Western Conference again. You wrote in December, I believe, on the Oilers and the fact that a trade was coming at some point. It wasn't a matter of when, or a matter of if, but a matter of when. Now, they have McDavid coming back here shortly, which is obviously a huge addition that you're getting for nothing. What do you think the Oilers are going to, like, is he going to be an immediate boost to this team, or do you see them making a big splash trade this season?
I don't see them making a big splash trade. Now I think we can talk right to the deadline, right, guys? That's kind of the next time we're going to see big trades. And the reason is this. The Oilers need... they clearly need defensemen. You know, the trade's going to be one of these young forwards for a defenseman, or, you know, a package for a couple defensemen or whatever. And all I know is this. I guess Seth Jones for Ryan Johansson is the red herring in this, but teams that are making the playoffs or are good, you know, that look like they're making a run here, they're not giving up any defensemen mid-season. This is the kind of trade that Edmonton will make heading into the draft. There will be some probably swapping of draft picks. They'll try to pick on a team like, let's say Chicago with a couple of big contracts coming up this year. Seabrooks kicks in, right? That's kind of where Edmonton's going to get their work done. They have to get a defenseman or two in here. There's just, well, they need 2. This trade will at least bring in 1. There's no other way to do it. So will that happen mid-season? I don't see it happening mid-season. I see it happening, but not at the trade deadline.
Pushing all the way to the coast with the Canucks. Sort of interesting times with Vancouver, and we saw recently the team's decision to try and move on from Chris Higgins. It seems like Vancouver is sort of bent on this plan where it wants to incorporate more youth, but doesn't want to play the game of finishing last in the league and drafting, you know, whatever it is, first, second, third. Not that that's a bulletproof plan, but How do you see things playing out there long term? Do you think this is a feasible way to approach this by saying, hey, we don't want to be terrible, but we also want to turn the soil here and rise back up in the standings?
Well, the problem with Vancouver is they've got enough guys who know how to win there. They've got a good goaltender, and they've got, when healthy, a few defensemen. So, you know, I'll tell you what, I live in Edmonton, and as bad as the Oilers have been, and no one's watched more of it than these eyes right here, they've never tried to be bad. Right? They've made a lot of dumb mistakes, and they've signed a lot of bad players and made a lot of poor decisions that have made them, you know, put them at the bottom, and they've had a ton of injuries. This is a good example this year. I checked 4 days ago, Edmonton had the most man games lost in the entire league this year. So they're not trying to be in last place, and Vancouver's the same. They've got some players that helped them to win enough games here. The Sedins are still pretty good. Ryan Miller's still pretty good. You know, Tanev and Ham, who's when he's playing, they've got a couple, you know, they got three or four defensemen that aren't bad there. So it's hard, you know, other than going to the trade deadline and just moving a bunch of guys out, they're not going to be a last place team. And yeah, I agree with you. Sometimes you think maybe you should be and you can move on. But the other thing that's not going on in Vancouver, guys, is they don't have enough good youth coming that they've got to move veterans out to make room for them. You know, they're moving on from Higgins because Higgins is probably pretty close to being done here. But, you know, Horvat's playing every night. He's a nice player. McCann, looks like even a better player, but I think he probably should have been in junior this year. Vertanen is not really quite ready. So you got to remember, before you move out all these veteran guys, you got to have youth pushing to take their jobs. And Vancouver's not there yet.
So out of those three teams, Vancouver, Calgary, and Edmonton, are you picking Vancouver as the most likely of those three to make the playoffs, or would you pick one of the Alberta teams?
Oh, that's a good question. I would pick Calgary, frankly. I would pick Calgary as the team. And the reason is, if they get goaltending, and they got by far the best set of defensemen, by far.
Yeah, among the best in the league, really, when it's cooking.
No, it's a good defense. I mean, they got, in Brody and Giordano, they got there's 25-minute pair right there that any team in the league would love to have. So, and behind that, they got Hamilton, and they've got little number four, whose name I always trip on. And Dennis Wiedemann gives them a bunch of power play time as well. So, listen, they got a good defense, and that's what lets them survive. If Rommel plays well, and then up front, they have enough. You know, they're not great, but they've got some really good players. Goodrow's a superstar. Monahan's a good player. Ferland might be a good winger for those guys. You know, and after that, it gets a little scarce. So Calgary may make the playoffs. I don't think they're going to win any Stanley Cups here, but I honestly believe, guys, that as Edmonton grows here and Calgary grows, the worm's going to turn. I think Vancouver's got to go south ways here. And I think we actually might see an Edmonton-Calgary playoff series, you know, in the foreseeable future.
Well, wow.
Perfect.
That'd be awesome.
Perfect segue to end this with a plug for your book, The Battle of Alberta. My God, how fun would it be if we saw a resurrection of that?
Well, you know, you can't have a good playoff, a good rivalry without a playoff meeting. I mean, what's the Leafs and Senators rivalry like these days, right?
Sure.
And nowhere near as good as it was when they were playing every year in the playoffs. And clearly the same goes for Edmonton. They have not, neither team has held up their end of the bargain, particularly the one in Edmonton. So, yeah, I think we're getting there. I think that, you know, Calgary's well run and they've got a nice looking start to a good team. And I think finally we can say, gentlemen, that Edmonton has a front office that knows what it's doing here. Pete Chiarelli knows how to build a team. I believe he built one in Boston to win a cup. And I personally believe that Todd McClellan is an excellent head coach here. And I think with all those number ones, I think Edmonton, what was the tweet from the Columbus Blue Jackets that Edmonton might win the Powerball lottery coming up?
That's awesome.
So with all that luck, they might finally put a team on the ice here.
Well, we'll be when that finally happens, we know Spec will be dialed right in. Thanks for joining us today.
Hey, pleasure, guys. Call anytime.
That is Mark Spector of Sportsnet.ca. Coming up, last segment of Tape to Tape. We'll put a bow on all of this. Stay with us.
Daniel is second of the game, and yet he skated right over to the Panther.
You know
pit.
What?
It's our Fort Lauderdale International Airport play of the game.
You know what? It probably was Daniel Sedin. Yeah. Look at that lowlife. I can't believe it.
My God, as the Sedins are pointing fingers now.
Well, now that the officials are in between everybody, sure.
Well, normally they only use those fingers to lick the peanut butter off of their bread. What are they doing pointing fingers?
Welcome back to Tape to Tape. Danny Potvin.
I used to respect the Islanders dynasty. Now I don't know what to think. I don't know how you lick peanut butter off your finger from bread. That was confusing.
What does that even mean? What was he saying? And to call the Sedins lowlifes?
Well, that is positively ridiculous, right?
Look at that lowlife.
I mean, there are some Homer announcers across the league that, oh man, it really irritates me.
This is unconfirmed, but I actually heard this today on another broadcast that will remain nameless. I heard that there's actually like, I guess the broadcasters meet in the each summer, and there's a little bit of talk now with like more and more out of market viewing to turn down the homerism just a little bit. That might have been the jump the shark moment.
Yeah, really.
And you dummies like you.
Exactly.
Yep.
Yeah, things got a little hot in that game. That was Vancouver, Florida. Danny Potvin on the Panthers broadcast, obviously. And the game before was the one where we saw Aaron Ekblad run into the boards by Matt Hendricks of the Oilers. No penalty, mm-hmm. but a three-game suspension. I know you have some strong feelings on this.
Yeah, well, I don't know. To me, hitting from behind is the worst problem in the NHL now because there hasn't been a really significant injury yet. Like, is that what it's going to take? Do we need a spinal cord injury before something happens here? Like, you see, as soon as I saw that hit, the referee is looking right at the play and he's standing right next to it. I'm like, why is this not a call? Why is the NHL not targeting
And it wasn't one, for those who haven't seen it, wasn't one where Ekblad turned late. He was chasing the puck behind his own net from the blue line. So Hendricks is looking at number 5 the whole way and he just continued right through.
Yeah. And, you know, unfortunately, we saw at the women's game of the Winter Classic, Dana Lang had a serious spinal cord injury. That wasn't an intentional hit or something. That was, from what I've heard, an accidental fall. But
very much so. Yeah.
This is what can happen on a hit from behind. And if you're trying to hit somebody, you can do a lot of damage to them. And so I'm just wondering at what point does this become a target for the NHL to tackle? Because we've tackled clutching and grabbing under the lockout right away, especially. It's crept back in, but it's not as bad as it was in the dead puck era. You target it, you make it a priority for the officials to call, and they call it. Did the same thing with headshots, and there are still a few, but it's not as bad as it once was.
Come a long way, you would say, from 5 years
ago. You know what it is, you know what to look for now, and you're expecting the call.
And you just have to go through the growing pains, right, as you did
exactly.
with both of those.
And it's totally worth it. I remember and this is different because it's minor hockey, I know, but this was a major major point for the OMHA years ago, was hitting from behind. Call hitting from behind, and if there's any doubt, don't hesitate to call 5 minute and kick them out of the game, because it's all about sending that message and kind of drilling it home that this is no longer acceptable.
Skew on the side of strong call.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't know if it'll ever go that far in the NHL, but at least how that one is not even 2 minutes when you just drive him face first into the boards. As you said, he was never turned the other way. I mean, it blows my mind because, I don't know, to me it's the most dangerous play in hockey, because you could put somebody in a wheelchair and that's it.
That is not even Panther homerism talking there. That is just a straight fact.
I will rail on this again the next time it happens, even if it's not the Panthers.
Speaking of partisans, is there a set of fans out there more deserving of a winning product than the Winnipeg Jets? We touched on the other Western Canadian teams. We got to, I guess Winnipeg's more in the middle, but we're going to lump them in as a Western Conference team. Evander Kane comes back basically, almost about exactly a year from the time he was traded out of Winnipeg under somewhat shady circumstances to Buffalo. And the Jets fans had a little fun with Evander and the Sabres when he came back in. Of course, the incident allegedly was Dustin Byfuglien threw Kane's tracksuit into the shower. So the Jets fans took that as their cue to show up with a lot of tracksuits on, apparently some stacks of money taped to their head, all kinds of fun things.
I even saw a gif of a little kid who couldn't have known what he was doing, who had a stack of money and he was using it as a cell phone, like the Kane photo from Las Vegas.
Beauty.
But yeah, like it's so fun to... Part of watching Jets games is hearing what the fans will do on any given night. Like also they were chanting, take a shower to Kane when he was on the ice. But they've done things like in the playoffs last year against the Ducks when Corey Perry was on the ice and you're chanting Katy Perry. When Ryan Miller was playing last year or the year before, chanting silver medal, stuff like this, chanting go Blue Jays.
Going right for the jugular.
Yeah, like it's fun to watch just to see what they're going to do. Yeah, last year in the playoffs, how loud it seemed.
Oh,
the whiteout was so great to see come back again. It was a shame they only got two home games and then they were out. It's good for the city. It's good for the league. It's fun to watch. I would love to see them get back into the playoffs. I don't think it's going to happen this year, but I don't know if there's a more exciting place to watch a hockey game from your couch. You know what I mean? Like watching the arena from your couch because you can
feel it coming through the tube. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, as a guy who lived and worked in Manitoba for a year, covered the Manitoba Junior Hockey League, I will ride for Manitoba hockey fans. They are definitely a passionate, passionate bunch. So are the listeners of Tape to Tape. That's why I, Ryan Dixon, writer for Sportsnet, magazine sportsnet.ca, at Dixon on Sports, and Rory Boylan,
senior producer, NHL sportsnet.ca, at Rory Boylan on Twitter.
That's why we're here, to feed your passion each and every week. That's all we have for you this time, but come back next week for more Glass Rattlin' hockey chatter on Tape to Tape.
Look at that lowlife.
And she's hooked to the silver screen. But the film is a saddening bore, for she's lived it 10 times or more. She could spit in the eyes of fools if they had